Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
This is Solid Snake, and you're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
This rips my coronation!
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak! I won't allow it!
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Welcome out to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am your host for today. I am Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm not alone as I trek through the week that was, is, and forever shall be in the minds of you, the people, the Twigites. I'm joined with...
Alex, you like to bullshit that a lot, don't you?
See, I always love to flex my creative muscles to see if I can keep the intro at least as fresh in my mind as it's going to be, but as fresh as milk in the back of your fridge, but what are you going to do about it?
Mental masturbation?
Basically, yes. Got to keep those neurons firing, so to speak, so I don't slip into Alzheimer's and forget where I am, poop my panties, and all sorts of other horribleness that I'm not looking forward to as I get older.
Work that prostate water.
Oh, boy. You can find out those and many other phrases. So coming up on the show this week, we're going to talk about Free Comic Book Day, which happened last weekend. So I hope you had a chance to visit your local brick-and-mortar store and had a chance to check out some of the free comics that were offered. However, if you did not, apps such as Comicology will be offering some of the Free Comic Book Day titles will be available for free that I'm aware of. Through their app. One particular title will be available on the 16th via Boom's app, and that's Power Rangers Shattered Grid. I'll be talking about that at length today with Alex as we took a look at some of the Free Comic Book Day offerings that'll be covered during our news segment this week. Coming up for reviews this week, we have a brand new review, and one I've been agonizing over is God of War 4, or just God of War 2018, the reboot. We'll also be taking a look at the Switch version of Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, which is essentially a Wii U port with Funky Kong. Alex will be talking a little bit about that towards the end of the show. Of course, we have Satan's Pantry this week. I'm not quite sure what we've been doing with that, which on the topic of Satan's Pantry, you may have noticed maybe in the last week or two, perhaps a little bit longer, depending on how long I got lazy for. You may notice some of the elements weren't exactly produced to the level that I like.
What you're saying is you done goofed?
Yeah, I done goofed. I done fucked up, son. Done fucked up bad. But Alex sat me down yesterday. Mike, edit. Basically, chained me to a table, made me edit for like an hour and a half, and now everything is done until the end of July.
Yeah, we are good. We are good for several weeks. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of cool when you do in the realm of podcasting and radio in general, where you can get weeks and weeks ahead, where literally you just have to come out and record your talk bit, which is what we're doing right now as the opening to the show. But sometimes we have pre-produced elements, be them reviews, Satan's Pantry, that might be interviews or whatever, which we may have some of those coming up rather soon since we're out of GenreCon stuff. Which we covered that for a long time.
Well, Tristan got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and that was a surprisingly big event for us. So big thank you to everybody who participated in the GenreCon coverage that we had over the last basically 2 months. Because like I said, we got a lot out of that. Hopefully we'll be covering events such as Con Bravo, which will be happening towards the end of July in Hamilton, as typically we are guests there of Terrible Warriors. Alex has applied for media badges as Twig, so hopefully we'll get in. They haven't announced any guests or any kind of information, as the con is under new management this year, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. So,
and this is also around the time when a lot of festivals and events start happening.
Anime North being the big one.
Well, even more local ones to where I live, there's a Blues Fest, there's other things, and they're random, like you'll have celebrities show up.
Yeah, it's basically con season from now until about the beginning of September.
And there is a big car show that they do.
Ottawa Comic Con's happening this weekend.
Well, where I live, there's a car show that happens, and it's basically a parade of classic cars. And pretty much every year, people show up with, like, the DeLorean or the Batmobile.
Or the Ghostbusters car.
Yeah, and those are things where I'm going to try to go. I'll get some pictures, might talk about it. Depending on what it is, I might be able to get an interview with somebody about what it takes to build a car like that.
Yeah, because I know I'm a member of several different Ghostbusters groups, and building an Ecto-1, that is a dedication of love, and you got to wait for the right parts
to
come up.
And I mean, at least that's a fairly common vehicle, but trying to build a Batmobile, like an 80s Batmobile.
Yeah, especially the like 89 one, or even the 1966
or
one.
Or getting a DeLorean that actually works.
Well, I think they make DeLoreans now. I'm pretty sure they do, because a friend of mine on Facebook just bought one.
Maybe. I know that the problem with them were that they were just shit cars. So getting one that still works 30 years later is kind of difficult.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure of that. If you know if they make new DeLoreans now, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. Would love to know directly.
But I'll see if they're going to show up again this year at the car show. I'll see what I can do. Because there's all these little things happening. This is the time of season where all the cool shit starts to really happen.
Exactly. You're going to start getting, like I said, we had Free Comic Book Day. Right now, if you're Canadian, Ottawa Comic Con's going on. Calgary Comic Con comes up at some point later.
Isn't the Niagara one coming up soon too?
Yeah, Niagara happens in June. They've got quite the lineup this year. I mostly want to go for Michael Biehn.
I want to go for the wrestlers.
Yeah, there's a lot. Although Rey Mysterio canceled, though, they got Big Show, Ric Flair, I think.
They got a few others. A Sting, probably.
I think. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I know Ric Flair's the big one that they got this year.
But yeah, like, there's a lot of exciting things to look forward to, especially if you like going to these conventions and everything. And part of the reason to go to these things is to meet some of the vendors, some of the artists. Support artists, do not steal art. I remember years and years ago, there were people who would just sell prints of stuff they found on DeviantArt, and artists were getting pissy about it, and understandably so.
Or you have artists that maybe did art on one comic, but they're taking art from another artist on that comic that was more famous and selling their art.
Yeah, like, don't be a douche. Support people, and support the little guys too, because one of my favorite things to go to conventions now, and I'm going to do this hopefully at Con Bravo this year, is give Blair 15 or 20 bucks, and I want her to find buttons. On my D&D, I actually got this from Offworld Designs a couple of years ago. I got a bag of holding, and it's my D&D. It's my roleplay bag. And I have tons of buttons. I got things from Dungeon Crate. I got some stuff from when I was in the hospital. My friend Kelly gave me these really cool Iron Giant pins that I think were exclusive to Loot Crate. And I have, from Reddit, I have a Hand of the King pin which is on there too. I have an exclusive pin from Marvel vs. Capcom 3 from the New York City Comic Con. I love pins. So anything to make my bag more colorful. It's kind of like how punks always had those denim vests that were just littered in pins. Oh, I want that to be my D&D bag.
What was that? We don't want to conform. We want to be different. But hey, guess what? We're all going to dress the exact same and wear the same patches. I have to have a Misfits patch. I got an Iron Maiden patch. But we got to be different.
Yeah, it has to be that Captain Anarchy.
I love that. Just it's like the complete bullshit of we don't want to conform, so we're all going to be the exact same our way.
Logic, folks.
Yeah.
In a circle. So anyway, like I said, on this show, you're going to have a lot of things to look forward to. Like I said, specifically our free Comic Book Day coverage, but also coming up in the news this week, we're going to be talking about a piece of the Marvel Cinematic Universe has gone missing. And I'm not talking about the Infinity Stones for a chance. We're also going to talk about the wrong way to connect with your soulmate over 65,000 text messages. And we're going to talk about something really cool involving the Dungeons & Dragons world and augmented reality. And what do you got for us this week?
New G.I. Joe movie news. So there is something coming out. As well as there's a new law in Kansas, and you're going to have to listen to find out about it.
All right, folks. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But right now, we're going to throw things over to me, and we're going to take a look at God of War for the PlayStation 4. We are taking a look at the new God of War from Sony Computer Entertainment and Santa Monica Studios for the PlayStation. This is one of those games that decided to reboot a long-running series, which has been running since the PlayStation 2 era, PlayStation 3, and even had a couple of titles on the PSP. And, well, the story here, such as it is it finds Kratos happening sometime after God of War 3, where basically the Greek pantheon of gods lies dead, and Kratos is hiding out in Midgard in the realm of Norse mythology, and he has a new family. He has a new son named Atreus, and his wife, who has passed away at the beginning of the game. You and your son are set about a quest to spread her ashes across the highest peak that they can find, and well, that's her dying wish. And that's basically the entire point of the game, is getting to fulfill this last dying request. And what you get is a really cool story of father and son bonding, as a son who's not necessarily equipped for the brutality of the world that surrounds him, and Kratos, who all too familiar knows the taste of blood, violence, and war that has basically determined the entire path of his life since Ares, the original god of war, cursed him to become the ghost of Sparta, if I remember my mythology right. However, though, this game does take a fairly radical departure from the previous God of War games, which are very much traditional hack and slash. There's tons of enemies on screen. You have your Blades of Chaos. You're whipping them around. Here, this takes a more over-the-shoulder, third-person, think very much Dark Souls would be another game I would compare the combat in this game. And that's where this review is going to begin to piss you off. What do I mean by that? Everybody and their mother loves the combat in this new God of War game. And I do find it enjoyable, but I didn't love it. And that's the thing about this further review of God of War 4. The game is a technological marvel. Easily the best looking game on the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 4 Pro. It's an immersive experience, a story that's worth being told. It's a game that has multiple levels, very much an open air trope when it comes to RPG almost, because you can upgrade your weapons, you can upgrade Atreus, you can get like spectral animals, you can get like runic attacks, all sorts of cool shit. But I didn't like it. And that's not to say you shouldn't like it. A friend of mine was actually talking about this with me on Facebook, saying, as a journalist, I should very easily be able to separate my personal feelings from giving you an objective review. And that's what I'm doing here. I did not like the new God of War, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't check this game out. This game has a number of powerful reasons for you to check it out. The fact that combat is refreshed for the God of War series, rather than just taking on mindless hordes of enemies and you can see exactly where you're being hit from. does freshen things up. It makes combat more visceral, more in your face, more palms sweating as you're basically dodging in the way from Draugr throwing fireballs at you, or giant ass cave trolls trying to smash you in the putty, or being able to summon animals and having cool kick-ass armor to fight these giant bosses with. This sounds cool, but it wasn't for me. And that's really unfortunate too, because this is a game, like I said, everybody and their mother has been giving such a verbal accolade to. And I feel bad that I'm not a part of that crowd. But my friend Alex, one of the producers on the show, says sometimes games don't jive with everybody. And that may simply be the experience I've had here. And when you come to Twig, or This Week in Geek rather, you come for our personal opinions. And that's where I'm kind of drawing the line with God of War. I think it's a great game. I really do. I really think it's cool. I think it's worth checking out. I think it's worth owning. In fact, dare I say, I think this is a system seller. If you want something new and exciting, because I've seen people that are not traditionally gamers dig right into this and get super excited about it, but I seem to be the lone voice out of this. And I feel bad that I'm not invited to this party at this particular time, but you know what? Maybe I'll come back and revisit God of War someday, and maybe I'll be in the right state of mind, because the fact that it is a story between a father and a son does speak to me, because I am a guy who's never known who his father is, and just kind of watching that relationship evolve has been something kind of cool, and it's something that I wish I could experience. And watching Christopher Judge, the guy that played Teal'c on Stargate, grow with his son, I think is something kind of special. So this has been God of War on the PlayStation 4. You should definitely check this game out. It is a system seller and something you should absolutely have in your PlayStation 4 library.
News on the mark!
And that was my review of God of War on the PlayStation 4. Most definitely worth checking out, though not for me. I do hope to revisit the game at some point when I get a break in my gaming calendar. So, of course, it is time for the news. And in this week's news, we're actually going to take a special point of our news discussion to talk about Free Comic Book Day, which happened last weekend. Hopefully you had a chance to visit your local brick and mortar store to pick up some of the free comic books. But like I said during the intro, some of these will be available on some of your favorite digital apps such as Boom and Comixology. But that's not what we're here to talk about right now. We are here to talk about the news that is, was, and we're going to start with me, as a big piece of the MCU is gone. Just vanished, thin air. So you might be asking, what the hell is he talking about? So according to the Associated Press, the original suit that was worn by Robert Downey Jr. in the 2008 movie Iron Man, the first MCU movie, has, you know, disappeared from a warehouse. No one knows where the hell it is.
No, my new original suit is this.
The original red and gold.
Okay, not the one he made in the prison.
No, yeah, this is the original Mark One. Now, the suit is worth an estimated $325,000. So the last time the suit was seen was in February and has been missing since April. The owners of the facility did call the cops when they realized the suit was missing. Now, there is a surprisingly large underground buyer's market, black market.
But where would you place this?
Honestly, it's probably in some rich asshole's house. Honestly, because years upon years ago, the original ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz were stolen, and they're in somebody's private collection right now. Now, to own something like the original Iron Man suit, that is something you could never, ever tell anybody about, or you'd have to be so
that's
rich
what I'm saying,
to be untouchable.
Like, the ruby slippers you could have hidden away, pull it out when you got guests over and go, look what I got.
Yeah, check it out. But to have Iron Man chilling in your pad?
And at the same time, I'm thinking, my brain is thinking wrestler mode. Is this a work? Like, is this a publicity stunt from the studio?
I don't know. It's kind of weird the fact that they picked the original 2008 suit. It would have been more interesting had the Infinity Gauntlet gone missing.
Like, especially if in the next movie, if there's going to be some sort of time travel aspect, is there some sort of meta thing worked into here where Thor went back in time and stole the suit?
It's so weird. I mean, here's the thing. That suit is not exactly easy to transport. So think about this. For to steal it, like, you brought up a very good point. Where are you going to put this thing? How are you going to
How did you get it out of there? Are you telling me the facility had no cameras?
And had, no security guards.
Had no records of when they pressed buttons. Because that's something that would be under a keypad entry or a biolock signature. There'd be something that prevents you from just grabbing it if it's that expensive.
See, if that's the case, then I want to walk into the Marvel warehouse and just, you know, steal Cap's shield.
I don't know.
Or Hawkeye's fucking bow or something.
Stan Lee's, I don't know, shoe polish.
Or something. Yeah, it's weird. But like I said, there's a weird black market for this. It wouldn't surprise me if this ends up on, like, the dark web somewhere. Someone said, hey, you want Iron Man suit? $500,000
On the Silk Road? Oh, God.
Wouldn't that be weird?
It's like, here, you can buy drugs, you can buy children, you can buy stolen Marvel properties.
Wouldn't it be strange if some big Mexican drug lord owns it, some cartel boss?
Simply known as Tron. Dude's all encrusted in like random jewelry. He's got the Infinity Gauntlet on one hand, the power glove on the other.
He comes out, he's like, I control Mexico.
And it's very
and
specific.
Iron Man.
Yeah, it's specifically the... It has to be the power glove from the Wizard movie.
It's so bad. So that is one of the stories that I got this week. Obviously, if you know where this suit is, call the authorities.
Definitely. Jeez.
Can you? I bet you Robert Downey Jr. would personally reward you.
I don't know. Well,
he seems like the type of guy who'd be like, you know what? Here's something cool.
Maybe. I'm surprised they didn't give him the suit.
It's weird. Sometimes studios don't do that because I know Ben Affleck had asked for his bat suit from Batman v Superman, and they said no.
And yet they gave Michael Keaton his, I believe.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if part of that has to do with the producers in the film, too. Like, in the 90s, producers were a little more lax, and I can't see Tim Burton saying no, because some props from, like, old films have gone up at auction from the studios when they wanted a little extra cash. I know Guillermo del Toro owns the original Kraken from the Clash of the Titans. Like, he has the model.
Oh, he owns the miniature?
Yeah, and it was on display at that thing he had in Toronto.
Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, like, he's one of those guys that's gone back and bought a lot of these weird props.
I know a lot of Star Wars props always end up at auction. Like, I know Luke's lightsaber's been auctioned a number of times. Han Solo's blaster, a lot of studio scale stuff goes up. In fact, I think recently there was an auction where you could buy original pieces of the fucking Death Star.
Really?
Which I'm surprised they exist. They still exist, because they blew the shit out of that stuff.
It's like, well, how do you know it's from that Death Star? It's not just a piece of crap they found in a scrapyard and said, here it is.
Well, that's another thing, too, because that could be a piece from Return of the Jedi's Death Star.
Yeah.
As opposed to the 1977 version. But who's to say? But yeah, that's some of the weirdness coming out of Hollywood this week.
For my story this week, I've got G.I. Joe is finally getting another movie. I liked the second movie.
Retaliation was a lot of fun, especially the guy Zartan, Jonathan Pryce, when he was the president.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
And the Bring the Rock in was great. I wasn't a huge fan of the original G.I. Joe.
Oh, how it was Bruce Willis.
Yeah. But outside of that, I thought the movie was miles above the first one.
Yeah, the first one, they tried to set up the world of G.I. Joe, but having Marlon Wayans and Channing Tatum
and,
in their accelerator suits, that's not G.I. Joe.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt as
Cobra Commander, or Dr. Mindbender. Like, no, fuck off.
Like, yeah, it was just...
I like the chick that played the Baroness, but I can't remember her name.
Yeah, and they had Dennis Quaid as
Hawk.
Yeah, was it General Hawk?
Yeah, General Hawk.
That was good.
I like the guy they cast, the guy that played the mummy, Arnold Vosloo or whatever.
Yeah, as Destro?
As Zartan.
Oh, he was Zartan? Who was Destro?
Christopher Eccleston, the Ninth Doctor.
Also good.
Good casting there. And the fact that they hinted at his metal face for later on.
Yeah. So, again, the second film was a lot better because The Rock makes everything better.
Yeah, and I love the idea of, I think, the weapon system where they drop those carbon rods from space.
Oh, yeah.
And just where he's like, I'm going to kill everybody, disarm your nukes.
It had a different kinetic feel where when he's driving the little tank things at the end, when they're basically under siege,
yeah,
it had that over-the-shoulder gritty feel to it that the first one had, that sort of glossy. It felt like the Ninja Turtles movies, the new ones, where it's just a little too glossy and overproduced. And the second film had that, a more rugged commando type feel.
What I liked about the second one too, and this is the inner toy collector in me.
Yep.
Hiss tanks. Yeah. I got Hiss tanks, and I was so happy. That's my favorite G.I. Joe vehicle of like all time.
And,
outside of the Night Raven.
And moving on to this new film, it's not going to be G.I. Joe 3. It's going to be a solo film focused entirely on Snake Eyes.
Now, if they're smart, they'll keep Ray Park, who played Snake Eyes in the original two films. Ray Park, who you may remember, played Darth Maul in Star Wars The Phantom Menace, and is pretty much the go-to martial arts guy in Hollywood. He was also in Heroes, too, as well.
It's been announced for 2020, and there's not much on it other than Hasbro announced it, that it's a partnership with Paramount.
Well, they're also going to do a G.I. Joe Mask movie. They're doing basically a Hasbro shared universe because they're rebooting Transformers. And Bumblebee's getting a movie, too, in the next year or two with John Cena, which some of the first production stills have come out from that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping... It would be cool to see, because you saw a little bit of it in Retaliation, where you see Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow.
Yeah, like in this one, it says Ray Park hasn't been asked to play in it yet, so they're not even sure. Like, this is basically the film's been greenlit, but they haven't cast it yet.
Yeah, like, as long as you get a badass martial artist, that's like, all that matters.
It's clear this is because of Deadpool.
Oh, God, yeah. They want some of that ninja money.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, it wouldn't surprise me if Deathstroke gets a movie, because at the end of Batman v Superman, you see Lex Luthor on his boat. Oh, no, I'm thinking Justice League, sorry.
Yeah, Justice League.
You see Deathstroke and Lex Luthor team up. And, like, we'll form our own Legion of Doom.
Oh, it was so hokey.
But just the fact that I saw Deathstroke on the big screen, I'm like, oh, yeah.
The big problem I have with it is the casting of him in general. I did not like, what's his name? The guy from...
Oh, Joe Manganiello?
No, Manganiello's great. It's the other guy. I wanted to say Sperglord.
Don't use that word. That'll we'll make to, people angry.
I guess we're going to have to beep that at the 10-minute mark.
Yeah, you're on your own there, buddy. I'm leaving it in. All he can be directed
that's basically,
at
him. What's his name? He played Zuckerberg.
Oh, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of him. I think he's kind of a terrible actor.
I like him in those Now You See Me movies.
Oh, God, I can't watch those.
Those are fun. I'm sorry.
He's not a good actor. He has one tone in his voice. And he was just a very poor choice to play in any of these films, actually.
In retrospect, I don't think he's a terrible Lex Luthor in some ways. I think Gene Hackman will always be Lex Luthor in some ways.
And Rosenbaum, to another extent.
Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum, yeah. Who was it who played Lex Luthor in the animated universe? Was that Tom Clancy? No, not Tom Clancy. Clancy Brown, sorry. Tom Clancy's dead, sorry.
Yes, I think it was Clancy Brown.
I always thought he had that very deep tone to his voice.
The Kurgan.
And I loved it. But yeah, I mean, I think a new G.I. Joe movie, it's good, especially if they make it into a martial arts movie and focus less on the technology and the guns. Hell, you could put Quick Kick in this. You could put Jinx in this. Versus, oh my God, there's so many possibilities for this.
Where's Sergeant Slaughter?
You know what? If they have him for a cameo,
have him running
Slaughter's Marauders.
Have him running the like they
cut, boot camp.
They cut to the boot camp and he's still working.
See, that'd be cool. That would be friggin' great. My God, I'd love that.
Even for literally a 10-second thing.
Yeah, it's like, all right, recruits, it's time to get on the line. And just
fall in.
It'd be so awesome. And just have him come out in, like, his old regalia. That'd be so cool.
And then it cuts to, like, their martial arts training, and it's Iron Sheik breaking people's backs and making them
humble. I would love to cast... what the hell is that guy's name? He was just in Rogue One. Donnie Yen.
Yeah, Donnie Yen.
Quick, cast him or someone younger as Quick Kick. As, like, their resident martial artist, maybe get Ming-Na to do Jinx. And I'm only reason I'm saying these people because they're the Asian martial arts actors that I know.
Well, it depends on how old you want to play the characters. Because you could have Michelle Yeoh, Super Cop, as as Jinx if you wanted to.
Well, Jinx is supposed to be younger. I say Ming-Na because she still plays Agent May on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ming-Na's like 55.
But she looks good for her age.
Yeah.
And she could still kick ass. Actually, we were just watching Mulan. That's another reason why I mentioned Ming-Na. I forgot she did voices, too.
So it's surprising to me that they're not going with a third film directly and then leading into this, because it's been a few years since the last G.I. Joe.
I want to say 2015.
Is it? I thought it was like 11.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Like, it's got to be. I'm going to look it up right now just because it's really going to bug me.
Yeah, like, maybe 2014, because I remember I had a lot of the toys for it.
Yeah, it's got to be. Okay, I think the first one might have been 2011 then. 2013.
Oh, wow.
That's, I mean, it's been 5 years. You'd think they would do something to reintroduce the characters, unless this is going to lead into
Mask and Bumblebee, like, and whatever.
Because there's got to be some sort of tie-in. What are they going to do next? Like, put them in the Smurfs?
No, although I want to say they were talking about Rom the Space Knot, Rom the Space Knight, or Micronauts at one point.
I think it was Micronauts they were talking about.
That'd be weird, to say the very least. Coming up on our next story, this is particularly interesting if you're a fan of Terrible Warriors / the Cambridge Chronicles. So there's this big event coming up called the Stream of Many Eyes, where they're going to get like a bunch of famous YouTubers and Twitch streamers to play D&D. Very cool. But last week, D&D launched a new alternate reality game where it involves players finding a stone of great power sent to Earth by the mage Elminster. Because in D&D, Earth exists. Earth is a plane of reality. And one of the old D&D modules used to involve, I think it was, it wasn't Elminster. It was another guy. I can't remember. I think it was in Greyhawk. He filled a castle with monsters and filmed movies. And he'd send the movies back to Earth, and the movies would be like, oh, wow, your special effects are so good. He's like, yeah, special effects all right. And you could fight Captain Kirk. You could fight. It was ridiculous. And it was an official D&D module. And it was just so weird and out there.
Oh, God. I was thinking, like, a stone of great power. Would that be Evanstone? Because he's got great power in his penis?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. So evidently, this was sent to Earth by Elminster and is guarded by a person who has had their memories of their past life blocked. So far, the game has involved everything from Yelp reviews, you have to go to game stores around the United States and Canada. And now the game is starting to spread out to more D&D D&D personalities. So it wouldn't surprise me if Pro Jared gets involved, or people from Force Gray, or from Gray Force, I think it is. Will Wheaton will probably get involved at some point, and even a few gaming journalists. Now, I'm reading this story from comicbook.com. So, last week, players were sent a USB key shaped like a key from game stores that contained an image of rune. Each set of runes could be translated into a different D&D creature, ranging from the Tarrasque, which is basically D&D's Godzilla and fuck you, to things like a giant centipede. So the purpose of the runes were twofold. Players could use the runes to form an alphabet that could be used for future clues, and the runes were part of another puzzle sent out by a Twitter account, which is at Immortal4Tress, which is sort of like the big hub for this game. So if you want to follow what people are doing, you can check it out. So in order to crack the puzzle, players needed to shift each letter of the phrase, a monster fiercely unduplicated, by the number in the sequence in the tweet, to form a cipher. So a monster fiercely duplicated became this ridiculously long string of characters. The cipher was 7 letters short of the number sequence in the tweet. So players then added the word Owlbear, which is a D&D, this is the only D&D monster named in the runes, from the keystone that did not have a pair of duplicate letters. At the end of the code, those then shifted to form another cipher, which is a ridiculously long thing of words.
What the fuck is this?
It gets weirder. To crack the cipher, the players then had to use another message decoded from Yelp reviews discovered earlier in the week, which indicated the players needed to use one of the monsters as a keyword in a keyword cipher. By using gargoyle as a keyword, the cipher became convert new glyphs to page, word, and letter. So the only book that's coming out right now for D&D is Mordenkainen's Tomb of Foes. And I wonder if that'll tie in there. There's also an Instagram account, which goes to certain spell components, being somatic, verbal, or material. Combine that with a Twitter account, you get specific spells that correlate to the stone's guardian. And there's likely there's these other shield glyphs that are going to come out. It's fucking intense. There's even a Discord server where people are starting to figure this out. There's like a wiki page too. I'll tell you, this is way above.
Whoever made up this puzzle is at home rubbing their nipples with butter and just going, yes, 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 solve me, tease me.
They're bloody brilliant.
That's crazy.
I can figure this out.
That is deep.
Yeah, like Twitter ciphers starting to figure this shit out. Like, I am not a puzzle guy. I get frustrated at Resident Evil puzzles at times. And this would, I'd be like, yep, nope.
That sounds absolutely crazy to me. I would never solve that.
Yeah, no, not in a thousand
Not for not having the ability, but not for not having the focus and energy and wherewithal to actually do it.
I don't have the logic centers for it. I mean, I consider myself a pretty smart guy. But when you start getting ciphers and puzzles, that's just not how my brain works. I don't know. I think that's one of the coolest things I've ever heard of. I can't wait to see what's going to happen with the stream of many eyes when that happens in June. I'm sure we'll have some coverage of it. And also be on the lookout for my review. One of my first RPG review game books on the show. The last time I looked at was The Tomb of Annihilation, which came out back in the fall before I got sick. We'll be looking at Mordenkainen's Tomb of Foes, which takes place in the realm of Greyhawk, but also spreads across all the realms of Dungeons and Dragons. So we'll talk about Asmodeus, the leader of the Nine Hells, and all the demons and monsters that live there. So things I'm certain I'll throw at you at the Cambridge Chronicles to kill you.
Oh, God.
Okay. Now, to talk about something a little less complex, but equally as cool, we're going to be talking about Free Comic Book Day. Now, this is an event that's been happening since, I want to say, 2001 or 2002.
Something like that, yeah, definitely. It was back when I was in high school.
Back when comic book companies used to give out, well, free comic books to kind of get you to come into the stores, give the stores a little bit of a rub, you get some exclusive merchandise. Hell, I've even seen free toys given out on these days.
That was at the very beginning. They used to give out, I had a little Hulk. It was like a little, maybe like a $1 thing you'd get from one of those vending machines that have little balls in them.
One of the most expensive one I ever saw was a Firefly figure. And I think the figure was worth $15-$20. But obviously, the stores have to pay for these items to get you to come in, but whatever.
Yeah, it's going
to
be very big stores. Like, this year, you want to give the background of how we came about this? And
yeah, so this year, normally, when I lived in Orangeville, I would go to my local comic book shop, which was the Gauntlet. The Gauntlet is now an hour and change away, so going there is not realistic. However, Alex lives in Kitchener, which is about 20 minutes away. So I sent Blair and Alex on a quest to get free comic books on this day since I couldn't get out with my chair to get ready to go.
Yeah.
But there was a death windstorm.
Oh, God, it was the windstorm of the Armageddon, apocalypse, craziness. But there was usually there's about four comic shops that we can get to in my area, like fairly close to each other. And the power was out of the power, like the street lights were out almost everywhere around it. A lot of businesses downtown were closed. There was no way to even find parking if you could or do anything. And we went, fuck it. I guess we're going to come into Guelph and try to go. Because most comic shops let you take between one and three free comics, usually one or two.
I mean, if you buy something, they'll let you take
three or four more. So we decided we're going to go, okay, we're not even going to deal with this crazy traffic mess. Like, we're talking, the police had to be out to direct traffic, but there weren't enough police officers in the city to cover all the lights that were out. So we come out here and we go to the Gauntlet, and they have a thing saying you can take five each.
The dragon.
Yeah. Sorry. You and your gauntlet. You got that on my mind.
That's
but
right.
We went to the dragon, and I got to pick up five. Blair picked up five. And then we're like, well, let's check out any other comic shop in town. And we ended up with a total of 20 comics between us. Pretty much everything that wasn't a DC or Marvel comic.
Yeah, we got basically what we wanted to. I mean, I'm going to talk at length. I read three of the books.
Yeah, well,
I did pick up a few more.
You want to say which ones we got first?
The ones that I got, let me pull out my bag here because we got them all out here. Just give me a second. The professional of radio folks, I assure you.
Yeah.
We got Bob's Burgers, and that's from Dynamite Comics. I got Transformers Unicron from IDW. I got Dragon Ball Super, and that's from Viz Media. I got The Tick, and that's from NEC. I got Power Rangers Shattered Grid from Boom. I got Ultra Street Fighter 2 from Udon. Doctor Who from Titan Comics. And Howard Lovecraft Big Book of Summer Fun. And I want to say the retailer for that one is Arcana.
Okay, cool.
So that's what I got.
And on my end, now I purposely went in not wanting to get Marvel or DC because in the past they've all been weak issues. Basically, here's like 3 or 4 pages and that's it. And then we're going to have 20 million ads in here. So it's basically complete garbage.
Yeah.
And I knew that a lot of that stuff will be released online for free, or people will be talking about that anyway.
Yeah.
So I picked up The Tick. I picked up the Meta Baron from Humanoids. It's just an independent comic. 2000 AD, which is known for the Judge Dredd comic and a bunch of others.
I think Tank Girl as well.
But and they're usually mature. Well, this year they did 2000 AD Regened or Regened. Not sure exactly how they want the pronunciation. It's an all-ages version of Judge Dredd, which I'm confused by and intrigued. Kodansha Comics' Ghost in the Shell. I got Starburns Presents, which is Starburns is the
from guy from Community.
Yeah, because he's actually a producer and writer. I got World's Greatest Cartoonists. That's a collection from all over the world of independence from Fantagraphics, which is known for doing a lot of the indie sort of stuff. As well as another 2000 AD, but that was a previous year's free comic. They just had extras. I picked up Shadow Man from Valiant Entertainment. The Invasion, which is a precursor to what's happening this summer with Chapter House. That's the Canadian company owned by Jay Baruchel.
The guy that's Captain Canuck. Right?
Captain Canuck. And another title from Image called Barrier, which is very interesting.
Oh,
I'll be talking
about.
I also
picked up Overwatch, which I think was from Dark Horse, and Nightmare Before Christmas, which I think was also Dark Horse. But I didn't read those. I gave those to Tristan.
Yeah, which is cool. And the other thing is they gave each of us a DC showcase thing that has 3 little short stories in there. I think everybody got that.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised because it's fairly mature, and I think they were giving it to little kids too. Unless they had different bags to hand out to the kids that had a different one in it.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much, that's the only reason I have a DC one, is because they just handed it to you.
So me and Alex picked a few books to read specifically for this. So I read, big surprise, Power Rangers Shattered Grid. I read Doctor Who and Ultra Street Fighter 2. Shattered Grid is the one I was looking forward to the most, and the one I was worried I wouldn't be able to find, because Shattered Grid by Boom Comics has sold out every printing of every issue. They're actually doing second prints of issue 25 and 26 right now.
And you say that. When I was there at both comic shops, they had them stacked twice as high as anything else. And I thought that meant it was that they weren't going. Everybody was picking up a Power Rangers.
It's amazing how much the Shattered Grid has...
They ordered easily a 2-to-1 ratio. They had the same amount of Shattered Grid as they had of all the DC and Marvel stuff.
And for a small publisher like Boom, that's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Boom holds Adventure Time, they hold RoboCop, they hold Regular Show, and WWE Comics. So they've got a bunch of really weird properties, but Power Rangers is their most successful, which, considering Hasbro just acquired Saban, I wonder how far the Boom licensing deal goes.
Because Hasbro goes through...
IDW.
Yeah,
they do,
you're right.
Ponies, and they do Transformers.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But so Shattered Grid, it ties into the event. It gives you a background with basically who Lord Draken is. Lord Draken, for lack of a better word, is an evil Tommy Oliver who basically stuck by Rita's side at the end of Green with Evil, ran away for a while and decided, I will serve Lord Empress Rita to help, quote-unquote, save the world. And the issue ends with him stabbing Rita with the dragon dagger between her breasts and kills her. And he's like, I will finish what you started. All children got to grow up sometime. And so Lord Draken has shattered reality, and he's going to different Power Ranger teams to steal their powers. The issue opens where he's conquered the Samurai Rangers. So now he has, in his world, he's killed all the Power Rangers except for Billy. So he's the only... He doesn't have blue Century Rangers. He's got red, yellow, black, and pink. Pink are snipers. Black are, like, riot cops.
That's interesting.
Yellow are, like, martial arts with dual pistols. It's ridiculous. And Zordon visits the Morphing Masters, who are evidently... who control the Morphing Grid. And he's like, reality's in shit. We need help now. And he's like, well, Zordon of Eltar, we can't help you. You're on your own. And the Power... the Morphing Masters look like the Dino Charge Rangers, the Zeo Rangers, the Turbo Rangers. They look like every different Ranger you've ever wanted to see. And it's cool how they're trying to explain what the Morphing Grid is. And I'm really glad it explains the history of the Power Rangers comics up till this point. So it's a good jumping on point. If you want to get in the Shattered Grid, which is what I did, I started with issue 25, which came out in March. I jumped right in full feet. I luckily... had a gift card left over, and I went on iTunes and purchased all the Power Rangers trades that I could. I'm now caught up, and holy shit, is the Boom Comics run an amazing read.
You can buy comics on iTunes?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do it through Comixology, or you can do it through the Boom.
Okay, and then it syncs to your... That's actually kind of neat. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, it's really, 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 really neat. I mean, I had, like... I spent at least $50.
And just getting everything?
Yeah, just catching up, because the trades are so cheap. And it's such an engrossing storyline. And the fact that in issue 26... in the annual, which just came out for Power Rangers, came out at the end of April, Evil Tommy Oliver, so Lord Draken, ties Tommy as the Red Zeo Ranger, ties him to a chair and slits his throat with Saba.
Oof.
He's like, and this is my favorite part, and just kills him. I'm like, holy shit, this is not for kids.
Yeah, it's clearly not for kids. Now, for my first comic here that I picked out, I picked up Shadow Man, but it's more than just Shadow Man. That's the one from Valiant Entertainment.
And that's one from 2015, right?
Nope, this one's current.
Okay, this is current.
This is current. The older one that I had was the 2080 one.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to go into the story in this. It's just basically showing a bit of an origin of Shadow Man. And I think it might be it looks like it's a reboot. I think they're rebooting some of their characters.
And this is to get people back into the characters?
Yeah, because they launched, what was it, 2012 or something like that, 2011, I think, when they came back. And I had collected pretty much every annual that they had been putting out, where it was dirt cheap on Amazon. Like, we're talking the one where they have usually about 14 issues in a hardcover.
Yeah.
Like a deluxe edition. Where you'd spend, for Marvel or DC, easily $70-$80.
Yeah.
On Amazon, they were like $30 to pre-order these, down from 50-something. So I have a whole bunch of them, and I've been slowly reading them over time, because I was just like, I was buying every single one that came out when they came back, because they were winning all the awards, at the like the Eisner Awards and everything, those years, the first couple of years they were back. Now it looks like they're rebooting everything, because they've got that deal with Sony and Columbia to make three or four pictures.
Yeah, to make Bloodshot, I think.
Bloodshot, Harbinger... I think Exo Manowar, and I think one other one. I think Shadow Man's the one that they're working on. So it looks like Shadow Man's being rebooted now.
Oh, that's cool.
So it includes that. It includes an Exo Manowar. Looks like it was rebooted in 2017. So I think they did like 3-year cycles, and then they restarted again with new stories.
Yeah, they refresh it.
And then it includes like a look at the universe of the different comics coming out. It's something cool to check out if you did get a chance, or there might be a PDF of this online, as far
probably,
as...
Like I said, probably,
because I know Valiant and some of these independent guys, they put out PDFs of their free comics for people that couldn't make it out to the comic day. And it's definitely worth checking out, simply because this is a world and universe. This is going to be the next cinematic universe, I say in quotes, that is out there. Cause,
yeah, we'll see what
because
happens.
Because Sony has Spider-Man, but they really aren't... they don't want to put all their eggs in one basket and hope
that
it works.
Well, they've openly said Venom is not part of the MCU, which is stupid.
Yeah, so this is a universe that they can work with. It's probably significantly cheaper for them to make. And they're banking on that Vin Diesel version of Bloodshot to take off.
The next comic we're going to talk about, this one comes to us from Titan Comics. This is another licensed property. You'll notice a theme with me. I prefer the licensed stuff. This is Doctor Who, so it covers... the 10th Doctor, the 11th Doctor, and the 7th Doctor. Sylvester McCoy. You get 3 stories in here. And the artwork for the 10th Doctor, it's really weird. I don't even know. It's very cartoony.
Now, nobody ever talks about the 8th Doctor. Isn't the 8th Doctor the 90s Doctor?
Yeah, that's Paul McGann.
The one from the...
The TV movie.
The Eric Roberts movie.
Yeah. And although he was in a short which transformed him into the War Doctor with John Hurt, which is something no one talks about. Because, you know what, Paul McGann did get an audio drama, I think. But yeah, it also leads into, you see a Peter Capaldi cameo.
Okay.
Which is kind of neat. It's actually a really cool story where this girl's telling about her adventures with the Doctor, how she fell in love with someone. And she's falling through time. The Doctor's like, I can't save you, I'm sorry, which is a 10th Doctor David Tennant shtick. And then Capaldi rescues her.
He can't save anybody.
And he's like, Doctor, I told you if you ever fell, I'd catch you. And she falls into the TARDIS after falling through time. The other one is the Doctor breaks up this huge war species. They're like, how did we get our asses kicked? Our fleet is destroyed. We've been decimated. And the Doctor's like, yeah, well, if you come outside, maybe they'll let you live. So you can come with me or you can not. And then the other story is literally the 11th Doctor looking for a snack. And he goes to an intergalactic diner and he settles all these huge debates. And he's like, look, why don't you sit down and have a milkshake, share your war stories, and we'll have some tuna or some fish fingers and custard. And then it ends with him and I guess, I'm not sure which companion this is. I guess it's just a random one of them eating a tuna sandwich. I guess, I don't know. I followed Matt Smith's run, but I don't recognize the character, so maybe she's from the comics. Then at the back of the comic, there's a reader's guide, which tells you all the comics. It literally says this. With so many amazing Doctor Who collections on shelves, it can be difficult to know where to start. That's where this handy guide comes in. Don't be overwhelmed. Every collection is designed to be welcoming. Each comic book series is entirely self-contained and focused on one Doctor, so you can follow one, two, or all of your favorite Doctors as you wish. The series are arranged in TV-like years, collected in roughly three collections per year. So you can jump into whatever volume you want. They have the 12th Doctor, which is Capaldi, 11th, which is Matt Smith, 10th, which is David Tennant. They also have the 9th Doctor, which is Christopher Eccleston. But you also get Sean Pertree. It's going to bug me. I can't remember his name now.
Which one? Who?
The 4th Doctor. I can't think of his name.
Oh,
Davidson? No, that's 5th.
No, because two of them are the brothers that play them.
Yeah,
the 4th Doctor is like the most important one.
Yeah, I know too.
Tom Baker.
Yeah, Tom Baker. And then there's Paul McGann gets a collection, and then they even have multi-Doctor events if you want to jump into that. So it was fairly cool. And then the book ends seeing the woman Doctor, Jodie. I can't remember her last name. She was on Downton Abbey or something. But yeah,
Downtown Abbey,
or was it Westminster?
But Downtown Abbey. That sounds like a street version of Downton Abbey.
It's ghetto, yo. But yeah, the book closes with the new Doctor, which we'll see later on this year, I would presume.
Yeah. All right. For my second book, I picked up the Chapter House Comics. Now, Chapter House Comic is a Canadian publisher that originally started, I guess, a few years back to reboot the Captain Canuck series from the 70s. Now, Captain Canuck, while is not the greatest name, it was basically an attempt to make a Canadian superhero in the 70s. It's been modernized for today, and they started with that comic, but now they have, I think, 5 or 6 running comics. And the interesting thing was, a few years back, Jay Baruchel from Undeclared fame and all the other movies with Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
He purchased, a controlling stake in the company and is sort of like the head writer. He's the chief creative officer there now. So he oversees all the comics, which is kind of neat. I mean, make some low-budget comedy movies and a whole bunch of comics.
Makes sense.
So the storyline that they're setting up in this is an invasion from an alien race, and then it's sort of all the superheroes of the world were already sort of fighting each other at the UN because... You know,
basically, Civil War.
Basically, what it's showing is nobody's getting along with the states. And in fact, they have Trudeau in here, and then they have Trump and Putin, and they all have their own superheroes. And you know, to quote Trump in here, you Canadians think you're so damn special, but you're not. You're losers. Captain Canuck, loser. America doesn't need anyone's help. We also have a real superhero. Look at Battle Jr. here. You see his guns? Tremendous guns. He can shoot. Rocks? No, rockets. From his arm. Total winner. So it's a real parody spoof in there. And basically the American superheroes go all gung-ho, try to fight the aliens and get blasted. And then it looks like the rest of the world's having to team up. And it sort of sets up that. It's a tongue-in-cheek adventure. And then at the end of the comic, it shows off the other issue, the other comics they're currently releasing. One is called The Pitiful Human Lizard, which looks like a 1970s cover.
That's weird. I love how looks it's like that a, weird throwback. To
like
the
a Space
novel.
Ghost, Coast to Coast, Hanna-Barbera cartoon. Phantoma, which is like a phantom woman superhero.
I think I had a trade of that, actually.
Fallen Sons. I think a lot of these are Canadian comics at one point, and then they've sort of been put under one house now, and they're rebranded. So we got Fallen Sons, Freelance. Freelance was, I think, the second one they did, which was a superhero team comic. Agents of Pact. I have no idea what's in that. Northgard. Now, I've heard of Northgard before, which I'm assuming is another Canadian superhero group. Captain Canuck is the main one. And then they have a few trades that they're putting out of, I guess, individual graphic novels.
Yeah.
The Crystal Key, Queen Street, Valentin and the Widow, and Brooklyn Gladiator, Volume Zero. Oh, and something called Die Kitty Die. It looks like 1940s pop pinup girl comic book.
That's kind of cool. I kind of like how it's got a weird Fallout vibe to it.
So I think this is something to check out. This was considered a silver comic at the show, meaning not every store is going to carry it, but I can pretty much guarantee every Canadian store had this in there.
Yeah.
So because there would have been the CanCon aspect of it, having something Canadian in their store is good. Now, if you get a chance, this is something hopefully you found and picked up at Free Comic Book Day in the States, because it would be neat to have some more Canadian superheroes out there other than just Wolverine.
Yeah, like, there's Wolverine, Deadpool, there was a big... Actually, there was an article this week, if you look up Jim Zub or Jim Zubkovich, he created a new Marvel character. I can't remember what her name is, and I feel terrible for mentioning this. But she is... I think the character's called... the book is called The Originals or something, and she got covered on CBC News recently.
That'd be neat.
If you look up Jim Zub Comics on CBC.com, you'll see what I'm talking about. The last book that I want to talk about, this one comes just from Udon, and this is Ultra Street Fighter 2, and on the cover it shows Violent Ken versus Evil Ryu. So they're both in the grip of the Satsui no Hado, which is basically psycho power, and basically what Bison and Akuma tap into. And Ryu's trying to help Ken overcome his violent tendencies when he turns into Evil Ken, basically, which is the character you saw in the Switch version of Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Oh, okay.
So Violent Ken was the exclusive character. And it shows him, you see Sakura and Dan show up, you see them mention Gouken's murder, stuff like that. But you also see what drives Ken, what makes him violent, what will make him go to the limits to kill somebody. He almost kills Rufus from Street Fighter 4 at one point. And it's his family. His wife says, "No, Ken, stop!" And he's just about to punch Rufus's head into the pavement. And he misses, and he comes out of the Satsui no Hado, and he's like, "Whoa, now I get it. Now I see how Ryu conquered his evil side. What brings balance?" And he's like, "Mine is my family. Ryu, it's the drive to become the perfect warrior." And I just thought this book was so awesome, because Udon Street Fighter comics, I've been reading them since 2010. And they are so good. The artwork is so cool. This one was...
Do you hear the music in your head when you do it?
I do. I really do. I hear the Street Fighter 4 theme, Street Fighter 5. There's so many little cameos. You see Sean from Street Fighter 3, Third Strike. Like, you
motorcycle.
Can tell I'm passionate.
Motorcycle!
Like, this is my jam. I love these license comics, because if you get the right license and the right writers,
Yeah.
They're so fucking cool.
Oh yeah. Like, it's interesting to me that you wouldn't think it would translate because it's an action fighting game, but because you've played so much, I imagine you're playing out the scenario in your head as if it's a video game.
Yeah, like something must happen between fighting in Russia or something like that. And the Street Fighter comics, like, one of the things I used to read way back in the day, I don't think they were done by Udon, they might have been, but they were the Sakura mangas. And they are so entertaining. And even just the original Street Fighter stuff, there's actually, at the end of the note of the free comic book day, there's a Street Fighter Origins, and I may actually pick this up digital. They talk about the rise and fall of Sagat, the king of Muay. And Sagat's another one of my favorite characters. I suck playing as him, but I love the idea Sagat was Ryu's rival, and the scar in his chest was caused from a Shoryuken that went violent. So, anyway, I've rambled on.
That's actually pretty cool. I think it's really neat to check out. Like, they're usually larger. Like, this is a standard size issue that you had.
Yeah.
They're usually, when I see them in the store,
they're small.
They're more magazine. No, they're like a magazine.
Yeah.
They're a little shorter, but a little wider in the comics, so they feel more like a People magazine sort of thing. And I'm guessing it's because they're probably like shonen type series over there, where they come in magazines. So it's neat how they publish them here. For my final comic, I've got something interesting from Image Comics. I've got Barrier, written by Brian K. Vaughan, who I've heard of before, and I know
I've heard in good circles.
Yeah, I went to start reading this because it was the thickest comic I got there. It's like easily 30 pages or more. And I go to open it and I go, that's different. This comic does not read...
It's vertical.
Yes. It's not reading like a manga, so you're not reading backwards.
Yeah, you're not reading.
You actually have to turn it like you're looking at a wall calendar.
Yeah.
And you start flipping the pages up, and it gives you a completely different perspective on it. Now, the story is half in Spanish without it being translated. You're looking at it from two different perspectives. You're looking at it from an American who thinks the cartels are coming onto her property over the border, and also from a family of people that are trying to basically flee the dangerous city they came from and make it into America. And it starts with a woman finding a severed horse head on her front lawn.
Jesus.
And it's detailed. This is a mature comic, people, with the eyes removed. And as you flip through, it keeps jumping between English and Spanish, and it's just very, very interesting art, the way it was designed. I'm showing Michael as we go. Now, it leads up to a confrontation where the character in it finds a man who, I guess, was fleeing and trying to come over the border on her property. She pulls out a gun to kill him because she thinks that he's a cartel member, when in reality, he's just somebody fleeing, like, for his life. And at the very last two pages, the surprise is, before she's able to shoot him, before they're able to communicate, they get abducted by aliens.
That's a spin.
Because the cover, it doesn't really say much as far as it just says Barrier, but it shows them getting abducted, and it looks like this is going to be some sort of weird, crazy sci-fi story.
It's kind of like Cowboys versus Aliens, except
but in modern
with the cartels.
Day. Yeah, in modern day.
That's cool.
Very interesting. I'm going to leave this actually with Michael to take a look at. I think if they decide to go with this as a style of comic, it's neat and unique that you have to read it in a different way.
Yeah, I think that's rather cool. I think overall, I think this was a very successful free comic book day. This is
very
the best
much so.
One that I remember. This is the only one I've been excited for in years.
Yes, and I mean, there were a couple things that were absent. There was no WWE comic there, which I was kind of hoping for. And from what I saw, the DC and Marvel, there wasn't anything that hooked me. It's all stuff that's either tied into the movies that are out right now, which we don't need to see, or they're like little samples of like basically 8 pages of comic, and the rest is all advertisements.
Thanks, motorcycle.
Motorcycles, the bane of all existence.
Bane of podcasting, that's for sure. For me, I was happy they did a tie-in to Shattered Grid.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they expected it to be as successful as it did. But then again, they put money into a live-action short film, which is like 2 minutes, but it still looks cool. And they did the voiceover trailer. So, I don't know. This, like I said, this was a very successful year. Udon Comics, I think, did a fantastic job. Titan Comics, you've got me enough interested that I may check you out on Comixology. I'm actually kind of tempted to renew my subscription to Comixology. I paid $14 a month. I could read as much as I want, as long as the books are...
Maybe we should reach out. Maybe we can get a press pass. for some of these items.
Maybe. We'll definitely reach out to some of these publishers. So that's going to do it for this edition. We're going to throw things over to Weird News and see what sort of fucked up things happened in the world this week.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Of course, it is Twig, the flagship of stupidity, and of course we love to cover the stupid, the weird, the just plain dumb, or the, well, strange, if you will.
Just something a little different.
Something a little bit different.
For something completely different.
And normally, then, hiding in a bush that is concealed in plain sight, we're going to be talking about the weird that happened around the world this week. And today, I've got a story for you. An Arizona woman is accused of sending 65,000 text messages after a first date with a man she met online. So an Arizona woman is being accused of sending all these messages to a man she met online and thought she'd met her soulmate. So Paradise Valley police arrested Jacqueline Aides, 31, Tuesday on suspicion of stalking and harassing a man she met online, according to Maricopa County court documents. Court documents say this woman of Phoenix had visited the man's home and office while flooding his phone with threatening text messages. She began stalking the man last summer shortly after meeting him through a dating website, according to the documents. She says to them in a jailhouse interview, "I'd felt like I'd met my soulmate, and I thought we would just do what everybody else did, and we would get married, and everything would be fine," she told reporters. Now, she sent these 65,000 text messages, sometimes as many as 500 in a single day. When a reporter asked Aides if she recognized the fact that sending thousands of text messages seemed threatening, Aides responded with, "Love is not perfect. I love him," she said.
God.
She began sending threatening text messages after the incident, including multiple death threats, because the man had found her car parked outside his home, and the police had her escorted off the property. "Oh, what I would do with your blood, I'd want to bathe in it," was an example listed in a court document.
Wow. Here's a question. Is the crazy versus hotness factor with her? Is there a picture of her?
Yep. And no.
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 The crazy factor is significantly higher than the hot factor.
She kind of reminds me of Kathy Bates in a weird way. And it gets better. She goes on an anti-Semitic rant at one point.
Oh, no.
And describes herself as the new Hitler at one point.
Oh, so she's completely crazy.
Oh, she's right off her rocker. Now, this is insane. I think at one point she'd broken into the guy's house, too. If I remember right, I was listening to the Preston and Steve show this week, and they'd covered this. And I think at one point, yeah, she'd broken into the guy's house and was bathing in his bathtub.
So she's bathing in his blood.
Yeah, like, oh my God. Now, I myself have been, I wouldn't say the recipient of a true stalker like this. I've had women that have sent me unwelcome messages, and I've had a girl who kept calling me constantly and kept wanting to show me naked pictures of herself. And at this point, it was like, okay,
a little,
you know,
disturbing.
What? Yeah, it's like, all right, you know what? That's cool and everything. I thank you for being a fan, but there's a line.
Well, and there are people that would say, "Oh, that's a problem I wish I had," but
no, you really kind of don't.
You may think it's cool to have somebody sending you pictures, but if they're unwanted,
yeah,
it gets creepy real fast.
Well, yeah, especially if you reject them. And that's the thing, too. Especially now, we live in such a world where stalking, it's starting to get taken seriously, especially if you're a woman reporting it to the police. And online harassment's obviously a very big thing.
But here's the thing. As a guy, you'd have nowhere to go. There's nothing really for us.
Yeah, because if we report it, oh, big deal. You got a woman after you. Be thankful. It's funny how there is that kind of double standard. And it's something to be taken seriously. I mean, obviously on both sides of the coin, be you a man or a woman with it. Because it doesn't take much for a situation to escalate.
Very true.
I mean, like, this woman, she could have faked something if she wanted to. She could have very easily done something, and the police could have ignored it, saying, "Oh, well, the guy said you were on his property, whatever. Think about this too. If the woman had gone to his property, the guy could have shot her. Because Arizona is one of those states where I think you can defend your property.
It's not even a stand your ground law. I believe you're allowed to just open carry there.
Yeah, like if, like, oh, hi, you're on my property. Oh, hi, you look remotely threatening. You're wearing orange. Time to die. So, yeah, that's not cool. So hopefully this woman gets the help she needs in prison.
I think she probably needs to be more in a mental health facility than an actual prison.
Well, that's another thing, too. And now I'm looking at this from a different angle. Now, the phone company. Why didn't this guy just change his number? 500 text messages? That's like robocall spam.
But that phone might also be used for his business.
Yeah, that's true. Because there isn't, like, a lot of information about him.
He could easily be a contractor that needs it.
Or a lawyer or a doctor.
Somebody where you, that phone is issued to him. And you can't change it because you lose all of your business contacts.
Yeah, it could be just a case of, I need this, this is me.
Or it could literally be he was building a case, like he reported it, and then every day he was getting like 400 messages a day. It can take 3 or 4 weeks or more till...
To build enough evidence.
And then right there, there's 5 or 6,000 she could have sent in like a 3 week period.
I mean, and now to take a look at this from a more humorous angle, a technological angle, if you will. Receiving 500 text messages. I wonder how quickly that would kill your battery.
Actually, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he blocked the phone and the messages were pulled from the buffer on the
server side.
Yes, they would have said, hey, this phone sent to this number this many texts. And he might have only received the first 100.
Yeah.
Before completely, like, blocking her.
Yeah, like, that's insane. And I kind of wonder, how is this woman, like, I guess there is truly an unlimited texting program. So if you're with Verizon or AT&T,
like, I was almost thinking 65,000 texts from one person. Isn't that like enough to actually fill it where you can't receive any more from that person until you delete them?
I don't know. I'd be very curious. I mean, I would love to see his phone just to see what half these things say.
Oh God, it's so crazy.
So yeah, that's my nutty story for the week. Like I said, I hope this woman gets the help that she needs, but I'm glad this guy's safe.
You've got a nutty story. I've got a nut story as well.
All right, what do you got?
Well, mine's a different type of nut.
Oh, boy.
There's a new law in Kansas. Cops can't have sex during traffic stops. I thought that was normal. You just can't do that.
Yes, but hi. Do you know how fast you're going? And by the way, blow.
Exactly. Wichita, Kansas. A new Kansas law makes it a crime for police to have sex with people they pull over for traffic violations or detain in criminal investigations. I thought that was just par for the course, but...
It's happened so many times that it has to be on the books.
As a specific law.
Like, some judge had to get together with other lawmakers in the state or city or whatever and say, hey guys, we've got a problem. There's too many cops fucking people during traffic stops.
The new law bans sexual relations, and in quotes, during the course of traffic stop, a custodial investigation... a custodial interrogation, an investigation, or while law enforcement officer has such person detained. In Kansas, was one of the 33 states where consensual sex between police and people in their custody was not a crime. So there's 33 states where it's not a crime to do that, if it's consensual.
That's fucked up. And as a cop, as an officer of the law, a representative... do your job, put your dick away.
Well, it says this became as a surprise to people on the House Judiciary Committee who thought that it was already illegal, but it had never been illegal. It was actually on the books as being legal in the books, saying you could do that.
As long as it was consensual.
Yes.
Which is so fucking weird. I mean, and we always have heard the old anecdote or the old joke about the person who gets pulled over and say, hey, I'll do this if you let me get away with it.
Well, apparently it says this spun out of a case of Lamont Murray, a Kansas City man, released last year after spending 23 years in prison for a double murder he didn't commit. The investigation in that case led to multiple affidavits alleging that the detective who made the arrest had a long history of coercing sex from women in... the black community by threatening to arrest them or their relatives if they didn't comply. And this was a case where he was arrested for a crime he didn't commit because somebody didn't want to have sex with that officer.
Jesus.
So basically he planted evidence on somebody else because that person's relative didn't want to have sex with him.
You ever notice how you never hear about this happening in, say, ooh, I don't know, Moose Jaw or Saskatoon or Winnipeg? You never hear this crap happening in Canada. Well, only in the United States.
That's because we don't talk about the prairies. They're not important.
They don't exist.
That's basically for JT and maybe the one other person listening there.
We love you, JT. But yeah, that's common sense. But that's scary, the fact that police corruption and the cops have taken things to such a ludicrous level of, I'm not going to say indignity, because that's not the right word.
Well, it says that the judge and the people on the committee were also moved by a case in New York where a teenager claimed she had been raped by two police officers in the back of their van. Jeez. But no charges were filed because the officers claimed the sex was consensual and therefore legal. Both officers claimed
that.
Wow.
Talk about taking advantage of your position of power.
Yeah, Kansas law previously said there shouldn't be, in quotes, sexual relations between police and persons in jail, but it didn't say anything about if they had been stopped or... Basically, once they were convicted, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because that would be like having sex with a slave, in quotes, because they have lost their rights as a citizen while they're in jail. But if you're just stopping them at a traffic light, you could walk up and put your dong in their mouth, apparently.
Because they're technically still citizens. And
yes.
Thus can consent.
So it goes on more and more detail about why they came up with it and everything. It's just absolutely crazy that this was...
A
like,
thing.
Like, we're talking weird news. This is weird to me. That this was not... This is okay in now 32 states.
Yeah, like, common fucking sense, man.
Can I make a guess, though?
Yeah.
Can I guess that most of those states are clustered around the center of the country? Center to bottom?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Basically, something tells me that this is okay in the Bible Belt.
I'm just shaking my head at this.
Because this is something where, if it was on the West Coast, East Coast, or even like Texas and that, I get the feeling that we would have heard about it in the news already being a bigger issue. But it sounds like it was fine in New York. Or at least up to a certain point.
Jesus Christ. I don't know what to say to this. This is terrible. And I hope this protects people from being extorted or harmed by the police.
Yeah, well, you know,
because you should be able to trust a cop.
Absolutely. And the too long didn't read portion of this is Kansas makes law that should have already existed.
Ridiculous. So that's pretty much what we got for you in the weird news this week, from bizarre text messaging stalkers to
boning police officers.
To boning cops. That's what we got. So coming next up on the show, we have another trip to Satan's pantry. What are we going to try this week? Well, you're just going to have to stay tuned to find out. We'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship, the fleet, the admiralty of stupidity.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig. It's inedible.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry as we crack open the evil side of your grocer's aisle, be it the international aisle, weird food you've just never seen before, or stuff we're pretty sure that has descended from Beelzebub himself.
That aisle that just kind of shows up once in a while in the grocery store, but that isn't there the next time you show up.
Exactly. It's when you've committed an evil sin against man and decides to reappear. But today's show is actually going to be led not by, oh my God!
Nom 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 nom.
Eat it. Alex,
sorry,
eat
a worm
it.
Just
it.
Came out of the can.
Holy eat it. Shit.
Eat it.
Alex, what are we trying today?
We are trying something that I didn't pick it up, but this is something I've actually had as a kid. One side of the can just says, I don't understand what that says. But the other side is grass jelly drink. So it's in this, it is a pop sort of can, sort of. It's the hardest can on the planet. Like, I can't crush it as hard as I can. I can't crush it. Anyway, a corner store around my public school used to carry these, and I would go there and pick up like this and Mr. Noodles or random Chinese snacks. I'm not sure if it's actually from China. Where is it from? It is from... What?
Etobicoke.
No.
What?
No. Number 72, Lane 25, Section 3, Shanxio Road, Chen Hissing Lee... Yuan Lin Chen, Cheng Huaxian. I'm assuming that's a province in. Oh, product of Taiwan. It says in another spot.
Okay. Say, well, I'm not presuming fucking Iowa.
Yes. So it is grass jelly with banana added flavoring. Now, what we were laughing at earlier is it has little jelly chunks, think like bubble tea, only I shook and what appeared to be the parasitic fluke worm from the X-Files started coming out of it. Remember that episode?
Yeah.
With the poo monster? All right, here comes chunks. I keep getting chunks in mine.
Shaking it.
This sounds delicious.
God.
All right, so let me see if I can reach in with my fingers and pull out the big one.
It looks like
there it is.
It's alive.
Wiley, it's okay, buddy.
Oh,
he didn't like that.
Okay.
Oh my God.
That went right to the back of the throat.
Oh, that's
ladies, I know
said.
What it's like now.
Oh boy.
Anyway, bottoms up, folks.
All right.
Oh, cheers.
It smells weird.
Yeah, it does smell weird. You can smell the banana, but more than just banana.
The initial taste is terrible.
This is the good shit here.
But
here.
Then it's not bad when you get it in.
This brings me back to being 10 years old and going to the corner store.
Oh boy.
Because we used to get these, it would be like, let's go get Chinese Mr. Noodles as a snack for 25 cents and then get this drink for 50 cents. It'd be like less than a dollar for a snack and a drink.
The taste is pretty good. The texture is, God, no.
Oh, I love this shit.
It reminds me of puked up black olives.
It's like a group of scientists got together and said, how can we make banana-flavored medicine worse?
Yeah, it does have that fake banana, but I like that flavor, but...
Oh, it's weird, man.
Oh, I like
it. It is
joke.
Not a very good looking beverage.
No, it looks gross.
The coloring is brownish green.
Too many chunks.
And it is extremely chunky.
I don't want to get chunked on.
I purposely avoided getting a lot of the chunks in. They sunk to the bottom and stuck to the cup.
Alex honestly, chewing them isn't that bad.
Alex is milking it for all it's worth. Do you want my cup too?
It's weird.
It's kind of like the
peanut.
Do you
want it all, man?
It's kind of like the peanut drink we had a few weeks ago.
Give
it
to Blair.
I enjoyed that.
Blair, drink it.
This is all chunks.
It's really good. It's
here's
all
like
chunks.
Banana.
Give me some chunks.
Oh,
I had way more chunks than that.
All I got left is chunks as well.
Give
those
me some
really
chunks.
Hard to drink.
It surprisingly doesn't have a bad aftertaste, but it hits you hard.
You know what? If banana medicine tasted like this, it'd be a lot easier to take.
Give me
but this is still terrible.
Banana medicine is through and through terrible. This is a whole lot of terrible, and then it dies down.
But I see, I loved banana medicine. I liked getting earaches as a kid.
You're fucked. Straight up fucked.
We know that, though.
Yeah, this is Alex. Need we say more?
It sounds like you're pouring ice into another cup when you pour the chunks in.
But there ain't nothing frozen here.
No.
Oh, yeah, that's the good shit right there.
So that's going to do it for this edition of Satan's Pantry. Tune in next week when we basically taste my nuts. You'll find out what I mean next week.
Salty? And your pants?
Chocolate salty.
Come here, you fat mouth little stupid bitch.
Alex here, and I'm going to talk about Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze on the Switch, the remastered version. Now, I did not... full disclosure, get to play the original version because I did not have a Wii U, as many people did not either. Now, I was eagerly awaiting this, and when I was able to review a copy of it, I dove right in. That being said, this is a hard game, and I had heard in the past about how hard the minecart levels were, but not just the minecart levels. These are hard levels. These are very challenging, but they're not punishing in that you feel like you've done something wrong and you're being punished for being stupid in the game or anything. It's not that at all. This is a game where you have to keep playing and you learn the patterns and you move forward in some of the more difficult stages that are the on rails parts. Now, I did play it both in the original regular mode and in the new Funky Kong mode. Now, Funky adds the added ability that if you land on spikes or thorns on the ground or anything that would be a hazard, like a spiked helmet, for instance, you don't get hurt because you land on your surfboard. So it's supposed to be easier to use him. And he also gets a double jump with a sort of floating mechanic, a la, I guess, like a mixture between Princess Peach and Luigi in Mario 2, if you want to think about how you float around. Now, you do float fairly slowly with him. So you'll feel like, oh, I want to move farther to the left, farther to the right. But no, it does compensate for that. It doesn't let you just move across the entire screen while floating. You can still die by falling down into holes. And you can still die, obviously, by getting hit. But you do get more hearts that way. You end up with 5 hits before you die. And that's before buying any additional items. You can buy and hold up to 5 items in your inventory and take them in with you at a time. So you could have 15, 20 hits before you die if you really wanted to spend your coins and go into a boss battle, let's say. Now, even with that, I still found some of the boss battles to be challenging on that easy Funky Kong mode. I'm saying easy in quotes because easy is not easy. It's definitely clear that this was included because, to be honest, I don't think children could possibly play the game and beat it on normal. And that's not just me going, oh, you know, back in the day, you know, we could beat it. I don't know if I could have beaten it as a kid on normal mode. This would have been one of those games where I grabbed my Nintendo controller and frustratingly threw it across the room. Only they don't want you to do that now because it's attached to a $400 piece of hardware versus a $10 controller. That being said, the visuals are just fantastic. I can't really compare it to the original, but I have heard that it's just slight model tweaks to the characters and a little more fluid motion. I can say this, I did not experience any slowdown due to the graphics. It stayed at a consistent frame rate when in docked mode and when in portable mode. So that's perfect. The audio is perfect. I can't really say anything bad about it simply because it sounds like the 90s Super Nintendo Donkey Kongs, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, reused compositions and then expanded upon from there. The controls are tight. I always felt like I'm in control. I'm not really slippery or anything with the controls, except if you're in Funky Kong mode. He does feel like he's a little slippery when you're in the double jump phase and you're sort of floating around a little bit. So it's something you got to get used to. I would also say definitely use the Pro Controller if you have it, because I found using D-pad better than using the analog stick or the analog buttons on the Joy-Cons themselves. It is nice having an actual D-pad to control everything. Now, the levels are there's plenty of them. There's a lot more to this game than, let's say, a recent release like Kirby. There's a lot more levels in here, a lot more replayability, but I never felt like I'm having to collect too many, you know, different things. It's not a collect-a-thon like the N64 game was. That being said, I have nothing really more else I can say about it, except it is definitely fun and it's definitely worth, you know, the price of investment into it, because I can see myself playing this over and over and over and over again. Check it out right now.
And that was our show for this week. Once again, Alex, thank you for reviewing Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze on the Nintendo Switch. You can check that out on the eShop, or you can buy it physical if you so desire. Though it's pretty much the same game from the Wii U from a couple years ago. But anyway, I digress. So, hopefully you've enjoyed the show this week as we visited Satan's Pantry, talked at length about comic books and the news that happened this past week. We also delved into the weird world of law in our weird news segment, when you really think about it.
Absolutely.
And what do we got coming up on the show this week? Well, we have yet another Twig DVD commentary, where we once again visit the good old land of Terry Hulk Hogan.
We take a look at
Shadow Warriors Assault on Devil's Island.
Or as I call it, Shadow Warriors, I got hair in this one, brother.
With and Carl Weathers and Shannon Tweed.
Shannon Tweed, the plastic Barbie doll.
I'm pretty sure, I think there'll be another Mayhem Mikes this week, I think.
I don't know, maybe.
I'm not 100% sure. We don't have a prototype this week, though we will have one the following week as we're going to start making our E3 predictions.
Absolutely.
Start getting out our bingo scorecards, because evidently Walmart may have spoiled a bunch of releases.
Yeah, I saw that. And we've
look
got
at it this way. Splinter Cell. Hype. 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 So excited for that.
Question will be, are they going to have Michael Ironside come back?
Oh, hell no. They'll bring back the other guy. Because they want to go with the new continuity. It's not that he's terrible, Sam Fisher, but give me Ironside if you can.
And on my end, I think we're putting together another Turtle Treasure for...
Yeah, we have a lot of reviews.
We've got a lot of reviews coming out, and they're timely. We don't want to sit on them. We want to make sure they come out.
Yeah, so you'll get a lot of new reviews this past week. We'll have stuff like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, from Arrow Video.
A good mixture of video and video games, maybe a product or two in there. We're not sure yet exactly what gets thrown in.
Exactly, and of course, you can expect the usual stupidity from us over at the Cambridge Chronicles as the story begins to wrap up now. So will these guys be able to save the realm of Faerun? Well, you'll have to go over to TerribleWarriors.com and go to the Cambridge Chronicles tab and find out what's been going on. And then I think a week or two after that, we have our roadmap show, which I guess we can talk a little bit about that. Not much.
Yeah, basically we're looking at about a year in or so of playing D&D, and it's time to shake some things up for a second season. And at that being said, that would be something that comes in the fall, just as new TV shows come in the fall, our new season would come in the fall. Over the summer break, if you want to say it in quotes, we're going to have a bunch of
TV movies,
one-off shows, miniseries. Basically, we're going to run a bunch of other games and decide maybe where we want to go for the next season.
Exactly. I mean, one of the game we currently rolled up last night, we can give you guys a little bit of a spoiler for this, is where we started looking at Marvel superheroes, the one from TSR from back in the 80s. And I introduced Alex to the Universal Table, and we rolled up two separate heroes last night. Alex's character is like Cloak from Cloak and Dagger.
Sort of. A little bit. Yeah.
And my character is Storm, but with mind control powers. And I am ludicrously powerful. And my roles were legit.
And that being said, your character, you're not a player in this, but your character will probably appear.
Yeah, exactly. My character is just an NPC.
It may be something where, you know, we're stuck in a pickle and your character comes to help.
Exactly. Basically, the NPC finger of God saying, okay, you're in trouble.
And that way, you don't have to go on the fly and make things up. You'll have a character statted right up.
Exactly. So, the phase rip system, it's tremendously cool. We'll talk about it at length in the Cambridge Chronicles, but not here. So, until next time, for Twig, we have been...
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying we'll hopefully have Mr. Christopher back in next week's show. But until next time, live free or die hard. And by the way, have a happy Mother's Day. Give your mothers a big geeky hug.
Absolutely.
From us. And,
because if you won't, I will.
Exactly. Believe me. Your mom.
Okay, son, now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are there so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in the
ropey, thick, window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me lucky tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at thisweekingeek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
I need a new nickname. Maybe it should be like Slayer.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Your home is important. That's why GEICO helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The GEICO Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call GEICO and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.